on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
There's a lot of, in spiritual movements, this tendency, people that are, you know, running prosperity gospel or positive thinking, they want everyone to think it's your fault and you did something that karmically attracted this negative thing to you. Mm-hmm. This is absolutely absurd to me. Just like if a gazelle goes to drink at a watering hole and gets eaten by a lion, is it the gazelle's fault? Well, no, this is part of a larger ecosystem. So much like that, we have individual responsibility for our shadows, but then we have to deal with everybody else's shadow as well, and then all the way up to humanity's evolutionary shadows that we also have to deal with. So it becomes a little daunting for sure, but we need to look at it more deeply.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth.
I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, author Maja Daou joins me to discuss her book, Astrology of the Shadow Self, Working with Oppositions in Your Natal Chart. In a wide-ranging conversation, Maja discusses the nature of the shadow, how everything casts a shadow, the shadow within spiritual movements in regards to dealing with suffering, doppelgangers, the astrology of Generation X, and reconciling shadows on the natal chart. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Maja Daou is a professional astrologer with more than 20 years' experience integrating her master's degree in transformational psychology into the interpretation of thousands of natal charts. A practicing witch and scholar of alchemy and occult lore, she is the author of Familiars in Witchcraft, The Occult I Ching, and A Witch's Bestiary. She is co-author of The Secret Source and creator of a tarot deck, The White Witch Tarot. She joins me today to discuss her latest book, Astrology of the Shadow Self, Working with Oppositions in Your Natal Chart. Maja, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thank you so much, Nicholas. It's great to be here.
Well, I am looking forward to this conversation. I always tend to say that, but I really have a good feeling about this. So I'm looking forward to speaking with you about your book. I love how you begin it. You say the world is a wonderful, terrible place. And you refer to it as the arena of terror joy.
Yes.
And I thought, yeah, that's right on.
I really like opening and closing lines of books. I'm a big reader and I worked in libraries for a long time. So I like reading and I always look at the first sentence and the last sentence of books. And yeah. I started doing that when I read The Stranger by Albert Camus, and he hit me to that kind of beginning and ending and then in the middle. So I'm glad that you liked the intro. That makes me feel like I did it correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I liked your conclusion too, but we'll get to that. So I think that the place that we probably ought to begin is with the shadow itself. I'm not going to assume that listeners have listened to previous episodes that have addressed the shadow. So I always want to kind of be clear about what the terminology is. That's the college instructor in me.
Yes.
So I want to ask you, what is the shadow?
Yes, we have to define our terms so that we can have the discussion, right? Yes, Socratic dialogue method. I do feel like there's a lot of definitions of shadow out there, and most people have gained awareness of it through Carl Jung. Mm-hmm. So he obviously put it into the collective conscious, which is ironic because he was talking about the collective unconscious, and then in so doing, in that oppositional way, made it into the consciousness of everyone. But a lot of people will define the shadow as things that we hide or repress from our mind into our subconscious. So whatever we don't like, what kind of feels icky or bad, we're just going to shove it under the rug. It's when we like bury the corpse or that kind of telltale heart situation that's still going to be there, but we just aren't going to give it conscious awareness. I like to let people know that the examination of shadow, and even as Carl Jung discovered it, went way back further than that into pagan traditions, into indigenous culture, where they not only knew that there was this phenomenon of shadow, but also attribute it partly to nature. So if you can open up what your unconscious truly holds, this is, we're talking about our bodies too, right? And so like you do things that you are not aware of inside of your body every second of the day. Think about if you could actually have awareness of everything, right? Tough to do. Yeah. This is what we would call enlightenment, so-called. Mm. But that means you have awareness of everything from the top to the bottom, above and below. And so then that also is going to get into death, why we die, how we're born, where we come from, like all these really big things. So I would define the shadow as not just our subconscious or bad behaviors, but all universal dark matter. We have natural instincts that are going to be included in those. And we're going to have to look at the phenomenon of darkness in a much larger way then to really grok what we're talking about when we talk about the shadow, which is a real physical thing and also a psychological behavior problem for human beings. Yeah.
Can you give an example maybe of how the shadow, the unacknowledged shadow, operates in someone's life?
Absolutely. The unacknowledged shadow is going to operate in your life through acting out, impulsivity, things that are, I guess most people would call petty or immature. But an example would be like if you had cheated on your mate. And then you become paranoid and think your mate is cheating on you. So you're going to project that shadow onto your mate, thinking that, oh, it must be them. They're trying to do it, because you're not acknowledging your own guilt and shame for the action that you did that you're probably perceiving was incorrect. So it's just easier to unload it onto the other person and create like a scapegoat to hold that behavior that you did, because it just feels too bad to admit that maybe it was you that did it.
Right.
You know, so that's like a very common example that I certainly see on the daily with clients that I interact with. Yeah.
Okay. And there's also there's the individual shadow, but then there's also, you said it was universal. So there's a collective shadow.
That's
right.
Right. Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll each have our own unpleasantries or actions that we do that maybe we need to, like, you know, the call is coming from inside the house. Like it could be you, right? That's performing the thing. Not always though. And this is what I feel like, which I mentioned in the book, there's a lot of, in spiritual movements, this tendency, people that are, you know, running prosperity gospel or positive thinking, they want everyone to think it's your fault and you did something that karmically attracted this negative thing to you. Mm-hmm. This is absolutely absurd to me. Just like if a gazelle goes to drink at a watering hole and gets eaten by a lion, is it the gazelle's fault? Well, no, this is part of a larger ecosystem. So much like that, we have individual responsibility for our shadows, but then we have to deal with everybody else's shadow as well, and then all the way up to humanity's evolutionary shadows that we also have to deal with. So it becomes a little daunting for sure, but we need to look at it more deeply.
Yeah. And I wanted to thank you for what you wrote in the book regarding the prosperity sort of gospel and that kind of thinking. I actually have it bracketed with an exclamation point next to it in the book. Well, and the reason I did that is because I understand where you're coming from, that there is this toxic positivity and it often ends up being like victim blaming.
Correct.
But there's something about it, and I don't know if I can articulate this as well as I would like at the moment, but it's something I've been thinking about a lot, is that what I see, especially online social media, which is, there's a shadow right there.
Yep.
People who are coming across or kind of hawking themselves as spiritual leaders of sorts, it's all about manifesting. It's all about manifesting wealth. And
correct.
I'm like, I don't know if that's what spirituality is supposed to be.
It's not. And I did write a book called The Secret Source.
Yes.
Where the point it was, this is another ironic thing. This was in 2007. I wrote that book, and it was as a reaction to the movie The Secret, which was, and if you trace back the lineage of these ideas, you can see it starts with hermeticism and the way that attraction and repulsion in the universe works in a more kind of way of physics, right?
Right.
It got usurped in the 30s with the New Thought movement, right? So I actually traced the lineage, and a lot of people that are talking about manifesting and success and all of this are ignorant of this history of where it comes from. And this actually is also where we see pyramid schemes start to arise. It's where we see multi-level marketing, which I also get into in the shadow book. And so you might think like people will join these movements or leaders because they think they're going to be successful and they can just manifest whatever they want and be rich. When really with The Secret, what we saw was the people in the movie getting very rich off of kind of suckering people into paying them money so they could be rich too, thinking this was the path to wealth and success through this positivity. And I feel like it's absolutely a con. It's nothing but charlatanism. And then it gets like kind of projected onto spirituality in a way that I think absolutely detracts from other people that are trying to do this through the misperception of guilt by association.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I appreciate all of that. And I see that in terms of like coaching as a pyramid scheme, you know,
because
that's what it's all about. It's like, look how fabulous my life is, and I can coach you to have the same thing. And then they're just coaching someone else to coach someone else. And, you know, and it's feeding on the insecurities and that we all have.
It's exploitative. Exploitative.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I think that there's something valuable in paying attention to our mind. But I also see that this is where I think the shadow comes in a sense, because I'll give you a personal example. I've been an adjunct professor for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And one school in particular refuses to hire, for the most part, the people who've been working for them part-time. They don't even give interviews.
Uh-huh.
And I got an interview, but then they selected someone who had never taught at the school. Even though I have outstanding evaluations and everything. And ever since then, I've had trouble getting like interviews. I've gotten some, but what I recognized once is I was on the phone with a friend, and it was just another one of those times where, you know, someone had said no.
Yeah.
I was a finalist for a position.
And rejection.
Like, no. Yeah. And my friend was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then it just clicked right there for me. And I'm like, I think there may be a part of me that's kind of getting off on the sympathy and everything for their friends. So,
you got fed.
Yeah.
A little milk from the teat. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I see that's where the victim, you know, for me, that was like, I had to recognize that I was falling into
those
that
are
victim.
There too, for sure. Yeah. We do some of those things and seek it, right? Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 But it's also not denying the injustices
that's right,
you know, because there are
injustices. You can't say it's your fault if you're a mother whose child gets shot by the police,
right?
That somehow that was your soul contract. That's one of my least favorite words, when people use that soul contract caca.
Yeah.
I think sometimes everyone's trying to have an answer for people of why bad things happen.
Right.
And so to explain why bad things happen, I feel like people are a little irresponsible sometimes, because there's negative energy in the universe and we're not creating it ourselves. That's hubris, right? To think that we could even have that level of power, honestly.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't like the idea of soul contracts, because again, that's victim blaming. You chose this, you know.
Oh, it's your choice. Like, better think of what does this mean for your karma or whatever.
Right.
Like, karma is punishment. That's the other thing I don't enjoy about a lot of those peddlers, I guess, is they view karma as a punishment system, which is an incorrect Western interpretation of it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I've interviewed Mitch Horowitz a couple of times, and he's really well known for the positive thinking, you know, the new thought, put it that way, the new thought. But we did have a conversation about this, and he admits that this lacks a good theodicy, that it cannot justify or explain really all these bad things that happen to us.
Yeah, I help a lot of people through death. I've been through it myself with members, and you know, you just can't, or like terrible things, crisis, like you're not going to positive think your way out of a rape. I'm sorry. Right. So you're going to have to like deal with it, confront it, like figure it out and try to understand nature and physical reality. Like I feel like we can come deeper into reality without need and still be spiritual. Like there's no threat if you acknowledge negative energy or even work within it, that means you're not good or you're not spiritual. I feel like this is having a detrimental effect on people.
Oh yeah. No, I agree. I agree 100%. And that's why I put an exclamation point next to that part in the book. Because I'm so glad. So important. Oh yeah. Before we actually get into the astrology part, I wanted to ask about something that you had commented on a little bit ago, and that is nature as shadow.
Yes, absolutely. Shadows are real things too, right? Or real as far as light goes. Yeah. But every planet actually really projects a shadow that you can measure. In the book, one of the things I talk about is how this little kid, I think he was like 13 or 14, constructed a device that could measure the shadow of Jupiter from the Earth. You know what that means? Is that from the Earth, Jupiter is casting a shadow on us. Right. So there's influences that we are getting from these shadows passing through our periphery from all of the planets. That's a real physical phenomenon. So in nature, there are shadows cast. We every night go into the Earth's shadow, right? The Earth's shadow is night. That influences us. You get dragged into sleep. Right? You can't like talk about shadows influencing and everything getting shoved into the unconscious. We experience it every single night.
Right.
Right. And a lot of my work I did with Dr. Kelvin DeWolf, who's indigenous. He's a Mi'kmaq Native American, although they call themselves the Loon people. And he mentions as part of his work that you have to be able to come out of the night shadow in order to really see reality. And then he does practices to engage that. But, you know, try not sleeping for a little bit and see how far you get. It's actually prescribed as one of the remedies for several mental illnesses to go without sleep, including bipolar, schizophrenia, to try to make them stay up for several nights because it creates a mental clarity. Obviously, I have to do a caveat of like, don't try this at home if you aren't supported and have resources, right? You don't want to just stay up all night because it'll cause you to have effects, right? So please be safe. But in nature, there's so much that we are not aware of. And for all of these terrible things that humanity does to each other, right? Murder, rape, everything you can possibly think of, lying, deception, tricking. These are all seen in species and nature as well. So I feel like for everybody so upset about all the terrible things that we do to each other, but we have to reckon with nature also and see the world we live in. We can't be so separated from nature that we think it's us or we think it's an individual, right? Our go-to is we're going to scapegoat an individual for being evil when this is actually happening everywhere on the planet Earth. Like we have to get a little smarter, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think scapegoating is a very good marker for shadow.
Yes.
And, you know, it's interesting because I know that actually comes from Leviticus in the Bible. And it was like once a year, the tribes would put all their sins onto this goat and then lead it out into the desert. And
they still do on Yom Kippur. It's the Yom Kippur practice. Yeah, that's right.
And that's total shadow work, shadow functions right there, because you're not denying, you're not accepting the sins. You're putting it onto someone else or something else.
That's right.
But
it's did you ever read Portrait of Dorian Gray?
Yeah, long, long, long time ago.
Oscar Wilde, right? He puts all his sins into the painting.
Right.
And that absorbs it. So this is it's an ancient practice and really spell work as well. That's in most religions will have some kind of scapegoat, but this is what we as people do. It's like Lord of the Flies, right? Yeah. Piggy becomes the scapegoat. So we got to be smarter, man. You know, like this is written about, like, and we have to know, we can't, and social media, it escalated so hardcore. Like all you have to do is scapegoat someone and then there's going to be a Frankenstein mob that's going to go after them in a lynch mob kind of way. And then, you know, what's the root of it still isn't solved. We're not getting to the bottom of anything because we just keep deflecting the attention to appease the masses and the sacrifice, right? So I want to try to get humans to learn from some of these ancient kind of addressing of these things in a more natural way, and all the esoteric philosophies and, you know, panentheism, they all are like addressing this, but we've totally lost track of it. I feel like if we just look at like popular media.
Well, and you know, with the nature of shadow, I immediately go to this idea of this dichotomy that we've created between culture and nature.
Yes.
And because we deny our own natural being, you know, and you even comment on this in the book, you know, and this is part of Western modernity that we focus on the mind and not the body. You know, we deny nature and we project onto nature, you know, that's where all the evil things live.
That's
the lions and tigers.
Isn't it
and
so
bears.
Unpleasant? You know, you got to peep, you got to poop, you got to eat, you got to die. We don't want to think about that.
Right.
Let's just think about our brains, right? Even though your brain is in your body. I remember even being a teenager and reading some of these things, and I was like, well, I mean, if you're enlightened, you can't leave the body out because you're doing it in your body. Like, there's no way out. Like, this is happening in nature. You can't think that there's some kind of, you know, nature and not nature, right? Like it's turtles all the way down. You have to really like ground into the thing. It's just hubris, right? If you think your mind is stronger than your body, you're not understanding that your body is holding your mind.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it seems to me that maybe what's at the core of that is a fear of death, because if the mind is separate from the body, then the mind can continue afterwards.
Exactly. It's 100% all fear of death. Yeah. Yes. Which it doesn't mean that there's not a continuation after death. It's not what I have experienced. I've died 3 times, and I can, if it helps comfort people, like there is more after you die that I experience anyway. I can only speak for myself. And I'm sure people have explanations. However, I'm not trying to just say there's only matter in that statement either, but you have to see that that's happening in the matter.
Right.
So does that mean? Like, what are the implications that the mind is in the matter? Mm-hmm. Then we get into consciousness and sentience and panentheism and all of these things, right?
Yeah. I like panpsychism. That everything's soul, or even animism, I think is even a little bit better, because that opens up everything, I think. So let's maybe move on to your book. For a little bit. And I'm curious how you are working with the shadow with the natal charts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Originally wrote this book in 2018. So just so folks know, like, it takes a while to write. Thinking about there. But in 2018, I've been reading about alchemy. I mean, I don't even know, and talking on alchemy since I guess maybe the 90s. And so all this stuff was obviously so prevalent on social media about oppositional polarities. And this is, you know, something I've thought about for a lot of years. And then I've also been practicing astrology. And I was like, oh, well, if you're going to look at the shadow, that has to be the exact opposite. Because in science, when you cast a shadow, it comes from the interference of an object blocking it, right? Like an eclipse, like the eclipses that we just experienced. Yeah. So I was like, it just makes sense to use the chart that way. And as I was writing the book, there was no one else that I could find that had done that. Right. It was funny, like, you know, as shadows go, I told an astrologer friend of mine who then told someone else who stole it, or like just thought it was a good idea. I guess steal is a big word, but they liked the idea and then did a presentation on it as though it was their concept. But I had listened to my friend tell them what I was writing about. So, and so now you can see it in a few places.
Okay. Yeah. I was curious if you had developed this yourself or if there was a tradition of this kind of looking at the natal charts.
I did it myself, although obviously there's other folks that are thinking right. that they like the idea and claiming to put their name on it. I had to fight someone actually for their trademark, and I won that case that they could not trademark it because it didn't belong to them. Mm-hmm. So, because I have receipts on my documents and everything. So, right. but I, of course, people have looked at the shadow in astrology for right. actually quite a long time. So I definitely was not the first person to have that insight. Right. People usually will look at the shadow in astrology in a lot of different ways. And there's a lot of astrologers that made big headway, like using that, because a lot of astrologers study Carl Jung.
Right.
So there's a big, and Carl Jung studied astrology. So if you're looking at psychological use of astrology, like Carl Jung was a major player. So right. the majority of folks that have that insight are going to be through the Jungian door, and they'll look more at like the moon or Mars or certain planets that will have, they call them malefics, right? Is the old school word. So they used to view it in that fatalistic way where there was good and bad.
Yeah.
Which of course is also a polarity. So if we go into oppositional use of the chart, because of what I've learned from alchemy, is we get a polarity, right? You get yes, no, hot, cold, male, female, right? All these seemingly polar opposites. And what my reading and understanding of alchemy presented to me is that the purpose is to reconcile, to come to the center point of the dipole. That is the purpose of alchemy, where you find the center. It's got goosebumps, so I don't know I'm going the right way. You find the center, which is the golden mean in that middle place between the pole, right? So I was like, well, if we're trying to find ourselves, first thing we got to do is you have the positive end, then you have to make a negator. Right. You have a Christ, you have an antichrist, right? I know everyone's going to get all mad at the word antichrist, but I said antichrist. And then in the center of the two, that's the reconciliation.
Right.
That's the point of peace, mm-hmm. right? To get the two ends to meet in the center. And that's the most ancient truth that I've read that permeates all of the literature. So if you go too far to the goody two shoes, you get lost too, right? Because right. now you're in la la land or idealism. From there, we get things like utopia, which creates so many terrible things, right? Yeah. Everyone thinks, oh, if everything's just perfect, this is great. It turns out that's caused more wars than possibly any negative entity that I can think of, are these pursuits of idealistic humanity that's utopian, right? Because right? yeah. then we're going to subvert any negative dissent, any opposition, any critique, right? Any other perspectives. If we go too far to the positive, this is a dangerous, dangerous place to be. Oh, yeah. If we go too far to the negative, you kind of just don't do anything. You sloth out and you go to swampy stagnancy, right? Where it goes into like the doldrums. So it goes to rot, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to find some place in the center. So that was the purpose of using your oppositional chart, is you'll have an ideal version of yourself, which is your positive, you know, perception based on where the planets are. But if you're not looking deep enough into the dark matter, into those shadows that you're casting, you're just going to leave out like such a big portion of yourself that you're not going to be able to come to know yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I found it interesting. And the way I was thinking about it, and you use this language in the book is it's almost like a mirror. You know,
That's
that
right.
it's the you hold your chart up to the mirror and you're going to see the opposite, you know. And
Exactly.
it, you know, and then I started geeking out because you were talking about doppelgangers, and I just went immediately to Twin Peaks.
He addresses a lot of those in Twin Peaks, right? It's so good and so important. But we all want to think that that doppelganger or double of ourselves is right, the bad one. But it's also, as I mentioned, has to do with our underworld self or our death self, which is also in a lot of traditions, right? One of my favorite stories of that is Percy Shelley, how people could see his double before he died. There are several mentions of that. So that's like a whole nother subject, but that's real too.
Yeah, well, that's part of the lore, I think. I mean, when I hear doppelganger, that's one of the things that I've heard, and I don't remember where I heard it, but it's that if you see your doppelganger, that that's a sign of impending death.
The harbinger, right? Yes, that's right.
Yeah, but so much of our mythologies have this idea of, you know, to look at like the hero's journey, the hero has to go into the underworld, and the underworld is the realm of shadow.
Yes. And in shamanic practices too, like I study so much of those traditions, you're going to go on a range, right? They do ascensions and descensions through all of those territories. And myself as well, as sometimes involuntary, right? It's not fun. I don't like going to underworld. In my personal experiences, as I started to do more intense spiritual labors, I'm not trying to be like, I know everything, but I'm saying, like, as I went through spiritual labor that I performed, which means like work, doing work, that when I would get my period, which too bad if this is unpleasant for people, I would get underworld stuff, like death stuff, or be able to see weird stuff with dead people. And I didn't want to do it. It was not something that I was trying to do, but it would just begin to happen. And then when my period was over, I would stop. So that was another like little fun thing, which also in the lore, you'll see there's all this stuff about menstruating women and death, and they treat, you have to take a bath that's the same bath as if you've been near a dead person. Because you have like a dead person leave your body, that's the egg, right? Yeah. So you have a death every month, which is part of your, you know, biological situation if you have a body that has those parts. So part of the shadow too, and why a lot of the oracles or female kind of goddess archetypes are underworld goddesses or chthonic, right, is the word that they use, like Cybele or Demeter, right? All of these underworld, also agriculture types of archetypes, is because you literally enter the underworld, right? Under the earth, like in the caves.
The one that comes to my mind is Persephone.
Exactly.
You know.
Yes. The queen of the damned. Yes.
Right.
That's right.
And that's connected to so many things, you know. But it is part of the cycle. It's all part of the natural
it
cycle.
It is that we're a part of too. We, you know, but it's not all that we are either.
Right.
We get born, we live, and then we die. But that doesn't really also encompass our identity. So, but until we can kind of get in deeper to that getting born and dying part, you're not really going to know yourself in totality.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was interesting. And this is one of the main questions I had for you, because in the book, you know, it kind of begins with you kind of talking about the shadow and how this all works. And then you start going into like the sun sign and the shadow of that, and then the moon sign, and then you go into the planets. And my question was, why didn't you address the ascendant?
Sure. There's a lot of books to write. The ascendant is in there. Honestly, I like the IC, which is down at the bottom of the chart, the Imam Coli. And then there's the descendant. And then there's the Midhaven, right? So those are for sure important. But I was like, if I do the Ascendant, I have to then also do the Descendant. I have to do the IC. Okay. I have to do the Midhaven, because then those are going to be important too. And then there's asteroids that we could do, like Chiron. I'm going to have to do another book. It was already like so many pages. And then I was like, oh, this will like never stop.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that most people, a lot of people, they focus on the sun sign.
Yes. Exactly.
And I've shifted to more of the ascendant just because that's where all the transits are.
Yes.
And so that's why I was like curious as to, because ascendant descendant seem to make sense, but as you were about,
then you also have to do the top and bottom.
Well, that creates like a cross, and right there you that sort of mandala of union of opposites.
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at I spend so much time just looking at charts, right? Because I do that for work. So when I saw the mirroring, I was like, oh, duh. Like, this is so duh. But it is, you're exactly correct. It's the cross of the four cardinal directions, right? Mm-hmm. When you look at the chart, you can see the ACDC and the MCIC on there. And so like to do the AC, you would just then look at your descendant, which would be the oppositional point to read from. Mm-hmm. So you could, it's still, you can still use the technique for sure.
Yeah.
And like there should be books about that, the four directions, and then also the transits, asteroids, right? Yeah. So it's certainly like a lot of data for hopefully that people will explore. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I know a little bit about astrology.
Yeah.
Not a whole bunch. I can't really read charts, but I look at mine, you know, and I've had my own journey of coming to see validity in astrology. And one of my best friends who I went to graduate school with, she's actually taking an astrology course right now. And she had to go through a similar process of saying, well, I think there's something to this. And
you just do it. You have to do it though, like with a full chart. So if you think astrology is your horoscope and cosmopolitan, like, nah, that's not how I experience it. When I look at people's charts, it's data. You know what I mean? And so for me, I just did this party a little bit ago. I'll give you an example of how cuckoo pants astrology is. And this was just, I was giving people at a party, like literally a 7-minute session. They were all squares. None of them had ever care about spirit or astrology. They literally were like CEO people. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I look at this guy's chart. He sits down and I'm like, oh, you have to be careful of your lower back. Like you have a lower back issue. And his whole face like went into fear and he was like, what is this? Like, what are you doing? He asked me if I talked to his wife and I was like, no, like, I don't even know you, dude. But he apparently had a debilitating specific lower back issue. So it was like so specific, and I can even get dates with the transits where people, it just blows your mind. And it's not coincidence, and it's not something, my experiences are that it's not ambiguous. Like I'm not making a statement that could cover a lot of ground. It can be as specific as a back injury in a particular year. Right. So the specificity, I feel like that a lot of people are missing out on if they haven't had their proper chart read, you're never going to like put much faith in astrology if you're just reading horoscopes, you know?
Yes. Thank you for that. And Carl Jung, you know, he had this interest in astrology that you mentioned, but he would look at people's natal charts before seeing them in therapeutic sessions.
He sure did. And it was in order for him to help determine and evaluate the individual's, you know, psyche. To look at the chart. He gets this. So this is something fascinating to me, which I don't know if you look at psychology. So I've studied psychology too. I have a degree in transformational psychology. And I was like, man, what is happening with Vienna? I was like, Vienna, we get Carl Jung, we get Sigmund Freud, we get Wilhelm Reich. I was like, what's in the water in Vienna? Is there LSD in the water? Like, how is this place responsible for the burgeoning of psychology, right? And so I look in, and interestingly enough, Anton Mesmer and then all these like alchemists are all in Vienna. And so we see through Carl Jung, and they all kind of go to that area and go in the universities and have access to the libraries, which have all of these alchemical and astrological books in them, right? And one of Mesmer's books, which I say they think he may have plagiarized, was about the influence of astrological bodies and how we get influenced, right, into certain things, which is how we form our persona and our identity, right? And then Freud gets all into how nature also informs this through our libido and all of those kind of things that are below our awareness that we don't know about. So Carl Jung really, I think, had a much broader view of utilizing astrology for psychology because he was in Vienna, where there was so much of that information available and acknowledged.
Yeah. You can do a chart for a city, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yep, have you ever
have you ever done
I haven't done it for Vienna. You're smart. I should totally do that. Yeah.
It would be curious to know.
There's something cuckoo there for sure. Yeah. Right.
Well, yeah. And it's always fascinating to me how historically speaking, there are times and places where groups of people come together.
That's right.
You know, and transform things. So you've got Vienna, you know, I always think about the beat writers in the 1950s.
That's in the Uranus. I know you said you didn't read the Uranus, but I totally talk about them in the Uranus section because that was, there's like these revolutionary cycles where individuals aggregate, right, around sometimes an individual, but not always. Sometimes it just spontaneously they gather. But the beats I love, and I'm so stoked that you brought them up as an example. Yes.
Yeah.
And I said they actually, I think, were the first revolutionaries for the LGBTQ movement, because a lot of people think it was the 60s and the free love, but I'm sorry, the beats were the infantry force, you know, at the head of that game. And I don't think they get enough credit for it, honestly.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. And that kind of leads us to something else in terms of the, in a sense, the collective shadows, because my understanding in astrology is you've got the inner planets, you know, that ends with Saturn. You know, Saturn is that border because that's the last that you can see visibly.
Yeah.
And then we've got the outer planets, and the outer planets have much slower orbits. And so there's a collective aspect to them.
That's right. Generational or sometimes multi-generational.
Yeah. And I'm curious because I know that for me, I've got the signature of Gen X, which is this conjunction of Uranus and Pluto in Virgo. And the shadow of that would be in Pisces, right?
Exactly. Yes. Which is where Neptune currently is, right? Is going over everybody's kind of all the Gen Xers' shadow location, right? Yeah. Trying to cause it to be creative or come into that kind of greater awareness. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it seems that there's a challenge for Gen X because we're often forgotten.
Yeah.
And it seems like part of our job here, and I don't know how this plays out astrologically, but it seems like we have to step up to the plate a little bit here.
I have felt that the next kind of iteration of politics is going to be Gen Xers, right? Mm-hmm. And this, hopefully, after we've seen everything that's happened, right? And been through, you know, I was in Seattle when the WTO happened. And like, so we have like, not just these current events, but we have like, at least a little bit of historical, like, you know, looking at seeing like what works, what doesn't, what burns out, like, what's rooted in pragmatism, but also like has a sort of spirit to it of rebellion in the Gen Xers, right?
Yeah.
What's your birthday? Now I'm curious. I have to know.
Oh, September 9th, 1960.
Oh, so Virgo too. So you're very Virgo. Very. Oh, that's cute. That makes sense with all your nature and earth interest stuff.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
It has to be grounded in reality, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, a lot of Virgo. I've got stellium over there, you know,
yeah.
with Pluto, Uranus, Sun, Aquarius rising.
So you very are well suited to do intellectual stuff. Do you do writing? Do you have books that you've done?
No, but that's part of the plan.
Oh, you got to do writing. I'll encourage you. Like you definitely should. Yeah. Maybe you don't feel like you could put yourself forward that strongly because of the Virgo, but we need that, your ability to see and articulate the information. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're, I think, the fifth guest that has said, you need to write a book. And I was like, yeah, I will if I can find the time.
Do it a little bit at a time. So I'm a mom with two kids and I have written, I think, like 7 books. But you have to do it little chunks at a time.
Right.
If you look at it as a totality, it's too intimidating. But if you take like 2 hours, you know, 3 days a week, in about 6 months, your book is done.
Yeah. 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 I have no excuse.
Take it in little bits. Like I would sometimes just write a paragraph, you know, and try to just, and then try to piece it together is kind of, I do it like brick by brick is sort of my approach, which I think is more, cause the time is a real situation for sure.
Yeah. Well, and it's time with the, you know, I still teach, I do the podcast, and the podcast takes a lot of time because I do read my guest book. So probably about 10 to 15 hours on every episode.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose I could just ignore reading the books, but I don't think
it makes the quality so much better when you have the ability to understand, you know?
Yeah. That's the goal. That's the goal. But then the writing is like, time.
You can do dictation. They have good ways now to transcribe if you can talk into something too, if it's too laborious to like type it all out. I use a lot of dictation software myself.
Yeah. Well, it's all coming together, I think, you know, with Pluto and my rising sign.
Yes.
It's a whole reinvention.
Coming into Aquarius. That's right. I think the tech will help you. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a transformation of self and it's interesting. So I look at the astrology of all of that. And I think it's really helpful to look at the shadow as well.
Yes.
Because I'm sure that there are some things that I am not seeing.
Well, the shadow, this is good. We'll talk, the shadow of Pluto and Aquarius is Leo, which is the creator. So this is so AI pertinent, is like the tech and AI being able to create content is opposing the Leo creators and the writers, the artists, the people that are actually creating. And that's why I think we're, as soon as Pluto started creeping into Aquarius, what did we have? Lawsuits against AI for intellectual property. So I do feel like that's really the signature of every time Pluto has come in and gone out of Aquarius so far. You can correspond it to the lawsuits of the creators against it.
Yeah.
Funny, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a meme I've seen recently where someone wrote that, you know, I don't want AI to create art, you know, art and music, you know, for me. I want to do that. What I want AI to do is wash my dishes and do my work.
That's right. please. Yes.
Yeah. Because we want that creativity. We don't want to hand over because that's part of what makes us human is the creative aspect.
It is our Promethean vestiges. Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's Uranus right there.
It is. Yes.
Yeah.
That unique ability to create and have it done sentiently through a kind of understanding or heartfelt perception that we have.
Yeah. And I was wondering, you created a tarot deck, and I'm way more familiar with tarot than I am with astrology.
Yeah.
Although I do the correspondences, which I find really helpful. That's actually what got me into astrology is looking at all
funny.
The correspondences.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you using like a Thoth deck?
Yeah, I use
he has all the planets in there.
Yeah, I use a Thoth-based deck.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Mel Moline's Tabula Mundi.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Which I absolutely adore. That's my go-to deck. But, you know, you see it in the Rider-Waite-Smith decks as well.
Sure, yes.
But I was curious because it seemed almost like that what you're doing in the book with the astrology, it's almost like getting a reverse tarot card.
Yes, it is. And well, so here's the thing. With all divination systems, I don't care if it's tarot, astrology, I Ching, you know, cowrie shells, you're looking at archetypes.
Right.
Right. So you're looking at archetypes. And the thing about archetypes is they're universal, which is why they're an archetype.
Right.
So if you know about the archetypes, you know every divination system.
Right.
If you learn the narrative and the myth and the stories, that's the thing that it is essentially at its core. Right. So if you understand that with tarot reads that you can have a reversal, you can have this in every archetypal system.
Right.
When I learned I Ching from Stephen Karcher, who was so genius, he was the first one to perceive that the hexagrams are mirrors of themselves in some, and they're paired one right side up, and then you flip it and it becomes the next one with some exceptions.
Right.
But that was also influential to me with the astrology, because I was like, well, tarot cards have reversals and the I Ching has reversals. Why isn't there this for the chart? Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Totally makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Terrence McKenna talked about that in the I Ching.
Yeah.
He went into how there's always that opposite, you know,
there
that
it
changes because he noticed a pattern. I think it's the King Wen sequence is what it's called.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So things change that way. But here's another question though, is that the archetypes typically have a shadow aspect to begin with.
They do.
And so when we look at, you know, you can look at the signs as archetypes and then the planets as archetypes.
Yes.
And so the one that I kind of focused on was Mercury.
Yes.
For a number of reasons. One is that I tend to be very hermetic anyway.
Virgo, you're ruled by Mercury, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's your ruler. And
my Mercury is almost in Virgo, but
where is it?
It's in Libra. It's like 1 degree Libra or something. I got my chart here. I can't.
So you're very fair. You're very diplomatic, and you can see both sides.
Yeah,
right?
It's actually
of the story.
It's actually 0.25 is my.
Oh, right on the nubbin. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like almost there. But how does that work with what you're doing? Because if Mercury always has this sort of shadow aspect to it anyway, how does that come into play in the system that you're proposing?
Sure. So it's about articulating the way that's going to form, right? Mm-hmm. So if Mercury has a shadow in all of the archetypes, you'll see exactly the way that that Mercury shadow is going to like kind of come forward for you.
Okay.
So for example, Mercury has a shadow like as an archetype, which is going to be right overthinking, the parasite, I call
it,
where we're going to kind of go off into this ungrounded abstraction that propagates ideas, right? That are going to take over like a horde of insects, right? Mm-hmm. Which we can certainly see is one of the dangers of Mercury. And it's very volatile, right? Like as a metal then, and it can have this kind of like destructive thoughts.
Yeah.
Right. So if we think, well, how is this going to form if, say, I have Mercury in Libra, right? If I have Mercury in Libra, that means that the oppositional placement of it is going to be Mercury in Aries, which is going to have that destructive nature that's going to try to destroy its own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume your shadow mind then likes to negate its own thinking that it's not good enough, correct?
Yeah, often. Yeah.
So, which is good because that way you're going to vet your thoughts heavily to make sure that they're accurate.
Right.
Is going to be the benefit of that shadow. So shadows all also serve.
Right.
Right. They're not just bad.
Yeah.
We need to use them, kind of like how Solomon hires the demons to build the temple. Right. Like you got to wrangle that energy and utilize it, right, mm-hmm. to serve you. So right. it also, the shadow of Mercury in Aries, it's going to be very good at debate, mm-hmm. right? You're going to be very good at that kind of ability to go through the different sides of the story and find and make the mm-hmm. decision. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. 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 And I don't want to turn this into an examination of my chart, but one of the things I was interested about with the Mercury is that you talk about the mind parasite, and
yes.
you also equate this. Let me see here if I can find the quote. Well, you mentioned, oh, here it is. The Mercury shadow is the mind realm of thought forms, imaginations, and egregores. And I was interested in this because I have talked a couple of times with Paul Levy, who has written about Wetiko, and Wetiko is a mind parasite.
That's correct.
And what I found interesting is that Mercury is tends to be seen as a personal planet without that collective aspect like the outer planets have.
Yes.
It seems like it's so charged right now in what's going on in our world, because everything seems to be about communication, especially with the social media.
Yes, it's a big deal. And for me, I became aware of it as I went into kind of larger realms outside of myself. So right. in order to see Wetiko or the parasite, you have to come out of all of your mental paradigms.
Yeah.
Piece of cake, right?
Yeah.
Spiritual labor is what that's called. So in order to see past your thought forms or paradigms or things you think are true, right? This is how we stay stupid, is we think something's true.
Right.
You have to discard all of those through quite a bit of labor or just being gifted with ignorance in order to be able to perceive a larger level of thinking that would be from a multi-perspective point of view or from an observational perspective that would not be grounded in your persona, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is very difficult. This is the transpersonal view. When you see mind from that view, you can see through history that all these groups and people, it's like football teams, is how Dr. Calvin DeWolf would call it, where it's like, oh, I like this side or I like this side. And then we're going to form an identity with the football team that we're like supporting or upholding, right? In that way, the parasite then takes over any possibility of you having an open mind to something else or being able to view things from a different perspective or see how mind is operating in you and using you sort of as a, you know, a patsy little bit, right? Yeah. And that influence that's going to come in, the parasitic influence, kind of like toxoplasmosis or cordyceps, it's going to drive your behavior through mind control because you've ingested too much propaganda or too much of somebody's narrative. So it's going to actually create a sort of toxoplasmosis over you that you're not going to be able to get out of until you can come out of mind and go into another perceptual realm, which for most of the indigenous or, you know, practitioners, once you get into psychonauting, comes from sentience or source itself or from your heart mind. So if you can't get out of the mind parasite that's going to be influencing you, you're not going to see it from that greater totality.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The note I wrote down here is labor, not belief.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Because I think so many of us too many people equate spirituality and religion with belief. Well, and it gets back to that idea of Socrates, you know, you brought him up before, you know, the only thing I know is that I do not know.
Which he stated in front of the Oracle of Delphi.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he did that in front of the Oracle. I'm sorry. This is just my reading of Socrates.
That's okay.
But it was a friend of his went to the oracle and asked who was the wisest person. And the oracle said, oh, it was Socrates. And then the friend went and told Socrates. I was like, no, that's not true. That can't be true. But he couldn't tell the oracle that it was wrong because it's telling God
that
it's wrong.
The oracle said that he was the wisest because he knew that he didn't know.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So well, that was the reason that the statement was made.
Yeah, well, I don't know the in the apology. That's where I'm coming from. The oracle doesn't. That's not said specifically. It's Socrates just says no. The oracle can't be right because the friend just says, "I asked who was the wisest person," and I forget the friend's name when I teach it in class. I'm like, "We'll just call him Bob." So Bob asked the oracle, you know, who's the wisest person, you know, alive, and the oracle's like, "Oh, that's Socrates." And I'm sure that Bob was hoping that the oracle would say, oh, that's you, Bob. But right. It wasn't Bob.
We all want it to be us. Yeah, no, but it was the sources I've read on it are more from the sibling Chthonic goddesses that I mentioned. And I believe that he went back to the oracle because he was like, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. And she goes, why do you think I'm wrong? And he goes, because I don't know anything. And she said, that's why you're the wisest.
Okay. I know there are different writings and there are different accounts of Socrates as well.
Absolutely.
So I don't know those, but from Plato's version, that's what got Socrates into all the trouble.
It did. Yes. He got killed because he wouldn't take sides and choose a football team. And everybody was offended that he was telling them not to do ad hominem. It's the most terrible, ironic thing that just continues to happen over and over and over again. Right. So tired of it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the beliefs, it also gets into, I mean, especially I can only speak to American culture.
Yeah.
And this is, even though there is a very fast growing group of people who identify as spiritual but not religious, Christianity is still pretty dominant. And it's this idea that the belief, it makes you a good person.
Yes.
And I see shadow at play. And this goes back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, that there seems to be often a kind of narcissism that comes into play that ignores the suffering. Let's give the example. I knew someone that had this like conversion experience, right? And it changed their lives and they said for the better, and that's awesome for them. And they would like post these things on social media that like, you know, their car wouldn't start when they went out for work.
Right.
And then they, you know, they prayed to God, you know, please help me get a ride, help me find a ride. And the someone stepped up and like, oh, I'll give you a ride. And so they're thanking God. I'm like, I don't see how God is so concerned about you getting home when there are like a million starving children in Africa. Right. You know,
well, it's because they have bad karma, silly. That's why. Oh, okay. Right. Yes. I know it's very, but then they don't acknowledge when something bad happens to them, or then they scapegoat Satan when they have something bad. So it's just a fallacy, right? So when something good happens, it's because they're good and God loves them. And when something bad happens, it's because of Satan.
Yeah.
Not because of anything personal. So it's this weird, like, you know, cherry picking in order to frame a narrative, which is unnecessary. Yeah. My personal experience of spirit, and other people could have different things, is that it was amoral, like coyote more or something like this. And everybody thinks that spirit is a morality or a belief, right? I experience spirit as no morality whatsoever. That's a human situation. Mm. And that people will become spiritually powerful that have no seeming morals, but just gain spiritual power because they're focused on spirit, not on other people.
Right.
And of course, this a good example of that was Genghis Khan, who was one of the most powerful spiritual shamanic figures in history, but he did terrible, terrible things, moralistically speaking, but for the greater good from his perspective, right? Yeah. Everything he did was to further his people, which is what everybody thinks they're doing when they do these things. And it's for the greater good. We have like Bush saying that the Iraq war, God told him to do it, right? Yeah. So then it's vindicated, and now it's a good thing and valuable to persecute these other people because It's a belief that I'm good and you're bad. This is a very toxic mental parasite, in my personal opinion, right? But then they feel vindicated and justified for any bad action because it's against Satan, or those are the bad ones and I'm good because God told me so, right? Yeah. This is really something.
Yeah. Well, Jung addresses this, you know, that, you know, I think that he identifies that there's a problem looking at God as being all good because we project the shadow and you've got Satan there. Yep. And that his argument is that, you know, we have to reclaim that shadow aspect, and we have to reclaim that in our idea of God, in our idea of divinity. And that's something that the Greeks held on to, going back to, you know, the planets that we have, that they all had their dark sides. They all had their shadow sides.
Well, then we see the eradication of the feminine.
Yeah.
As a result of that polarity that was created, right? Yeah. So But I, even as a child, I understood, and I had a fight with my Episcopalian preacher when I was like, I think in elementary school. And I was like, if God is universal and everywhere, how is there things that are bad that aren't part of God? And then all of a sudden, like, again, this cherry picking nonsense, which is like going through, or that women can't do this, or, you know, gay people can't do this, or they can't do this because that's whatever. And then it's like, you know, obviously I understand that we can't just have everybody doing terrible things all the time. So there has to be some kind of law and moral system, which most of religions actually cover law back in the day. If you get back even to like the writing of the Torah or of all of these kind of religious precepts, including like with the Greeks or pagans, there's law in that, which is kind of telling people how to behave. Which, you know, used to be about just trying to have efficacy so everyone can be fine. And then it's kind of turned into this ideological nightmare of judgment systems and justifications, right?
I know we're kind of way off topic here, but I'll
it's all the shadow behavior, so it's fine.
Well, with the morality, I definitely see an issue with the idea of law. And, you know, and this is where there's that source in the biblical tradition. You know, people think that the Ten Commandments are it, but there's something like, what is it, like 643 laws?
That's correct.
In the Torah. So they cherry pick which ones they're going to do. But I think the Greeks, and this is my approach, this is where I come from, is a virtue perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that virtue goes back to that golden mean. You know, because that's a central part of it, is that it's contextual in terms of your action. You have to think about it. But my point is, you know, and this all comes from Aristotle, the reason to be virtuous, the reason to try to be the best person you can be, is that the end goal is what he referred to. It was eudaimonia, which people often translated as happiness. But then now the more common translation is flourishing. Mm-hmm. If you look at the word, and I know that you enjoy etymology.
I do. I love it.
That it actually, eudaimonia is actually a good daemon, a good spirit.
Yes.
And it seems
your conscience, to be in alignment with your conscience is what it's really saying, which was what Socrates was also listening to his daemon.
Yeah, and
right?
That got him.
Otherwise, you get schismed, right? You must go forward with the advice from the good daemon, right? The angel and the devil on our shoulders goes back to all of those things. It's very accurate.
So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there.
I love it. It's so, and that's it. You can have, you know, anyway, that's like a whole nother thing, but you don't need to, you need to acknowledge when you have your shadow and that it's there, right? The danger is that you think it's not there and you're not that. And then you put yourself on a slant to anyone else you perceiving as holding shadow.
Right.
I think if we can all just acknowledge that shadow is a thing even beyond humanity, it's nobody's fault. And maybe then we could try to work with it or get into what is triggering the behaviors, acknowledge when someone's in it without judgment and try to lift them up, you know, closer to some, you know, evolutionary capacity of their beingness rather than everybody just shoved into their root chakra all of the time and then abandoned because they're bad people. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that came to mind with something that you said about your question to the Episcopalian priest, I think it was.
Yes.
Because that's kind of the heart of Tantra, is the idea that if everything is God, if everything is holy, then this idea that something is impure makes no sense.
That's correct. It's impossible.
Right.
It's an impossibility. Right. And that's the sacred and mundane, right, yeah, as well. And, you know, with modern spirituality, a lot of people are getting into that, you know, panpsychism, like you talked about, where there is that consciousness in everything. There's not, it's not, you don't get to leave it out because you don't like it.
Yeah. 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 For sure. And, you know, that's one of the things that I really liked about the book is that at the end of each section, not section of the book, but like, you know, when you look at the, you know, the sun sign in Scorpio and the shadow of that, that you end it with an example in nature. And so you provide those throughout, all of these examples in nature. And I was wondering, why did you do that? I mean, I think I know the answer, but I want to ask for...
I'm so glad that you did and that you noticed it, because that was actually my favorite part of the book and something that I try to do too. When I... Years ago, when I wrote my book, A Witch's Bestiary, I look at the supernatural creatures. And when we want to come into who we are and connect back with nature, we separate ourselves so much from animals and nature and think we're not that, right? So if people like really want to see, really want to understand shadow and nature, like you have to see how this behavior you're doing is also done by monkeys or like also done by an octopus. Like you can't, we're much more similar and it's part of our family. So I view nature and species as our family, and we have like familiar interactions, and they do a lot of things that we do and they want the same things that we do. It's really not that weird. And so in our imaginings of ourselves, if we can think less damaging towards the beasts, towards nature, towards species, I think that's really going to heal a lot of some of these polarities that we've come into, and to see that this is just like us.
Right.
You know, this is, I'm like the cat, or I'm like, look at how that dog looks like a baby, or like, you know, stuff like this is important, I feel like, for us to do.
Yeah. Well, our animality, if I can say that, is our shadow.
Yes.
Because we always like to make a separation, you know, like I see, you know, culture, nature, but it's human, animal.
Yes. And we all try to subhumanize or dehumanize by comparing to animals, right? When it's like,
oh,
no,
right.
You know, this is not, we'll use these names for people to dehumanize them, and it'll just subjugate them and try to dominate nature, essentially, which I'm not into shadow shaming, because you're just shaming nature. This is a toxic habit that I think is going to be so difficult for us to come out of, if social media is any indicator, right? Yeah. There's so much dehumanizing of individuals we're seeing as bad. And then we feel justified with the dehumanization, but it's just another way to dominate nature.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That seems to be our main agenda, or at least it has been for a long time.
I know.
And you can't separate the domination of nature from the domination of women either.
That's correct.
You know?
Yeah.
And the witch is the classic other.
It's the other, the outsider. Yeah. It is. And so, and that's, you know, not dependent on being female either for witches. There's a lot of male witches that I know too. So, but it is, it's that the feminine correspondences that go along with it, which is our bodies, death, our subconscious, these drives and influences that we have no control over. If we could just control the women and the bodies, right? Or the everything, then we could like, we'll win. It'll be utopia, right? It'll be no more problems and everyone will be fine. This is like so bizarre to me. Right. I don't know what's going on.
Well, utopia is weird anyway, because we always think about it as the perfect place.
Yes. But
etymologically, it means no place.
Ooh, tell me more about that. Where is that? I don't know this.
I forget. I think it's, is it Thomas More who
his book,
about
Utopia.
Utopia. But it's a fictional ideal, but utopia literally means no place.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
You know,
and so we have to recognize that it's an impossibility.
It is. It can be harmful. Like, what if where we're at is good enough? And like, yes, there's some problems, but like, geez, let's deal with it and look at it and talk to each other about it and figure it out. We don't have to like do all this weird stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, we have to recognize that there's the shadow aspect, you know, with perfection. You know, there's always imperfection, and the perfect place simply does not exist.
It does not. And it, where we're at, I think, is so good that we just have to work on it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, this is the value of the work that you're doing. You know, you have a history of examining Hermeticism, and, you know, it's with the astrology, it's easy to, you know, invoke that Hermetic axiom, as above, so below.
Yes.
But when we bring in Jung, you know, it's also as within, so without. So that, again, if you have those two places, that gives us that cross again.
It does.
We need to meet.
Yeah, we got to go all directions, right? Yeah. All of the indigenous folks I've studied with, including Kelvin DeWolf, there's more than four directions, right? Yeah. He says seven in his framework. But the four, you have to start that to be, to use a Freemasonry term, right? That's how you square the circle. So you have to get the four directions is just the start. And then you have to go through the other three. So, but we have to at least get those, right? When you get the other three, you go into hyperspace, which is where things really get fun. we're going to be forced there. They're making quantum computing. So I think people's awareness of hyperspace hopefully will be developing. But this has been another thing that has been around a long while that even the Greeks were aware of. So as it gets, it's still pretty far, I think, from getting into popular consciousness, although there is like metaverse stuff creeping in, right? Which is 6D. So all the 5D spiritual people have come in. Now we're getting to metaverse, which is like 6D. So I've been like watching my clock, like, oh, how many Ds are we going to get to like coming up? I'm hoping that people will get there soon.
Yeah. I don't know how many dimensions there are. My guess is that way more than we can imagine.
Yes.
You know, way more than we can imagine. So I know that we're starting to run out of time. So let me ask you just a couple more questions, if you don't mind.
Yes, absolutely.
And this is the big one. You've got this book on the shadow and astrology. And let's say someone's interested in this. And how would they go about working with the book, working with the information that you give and incorporating their shadows?
Yes. So it's pretty, I think, straightforward. You can use it like any other astrology book where you would simply look up your placements. You know, first you get your birth chart, which I offer a website that does it free, astro.com, which was, you know, Liz Green and Rob Hand. So like very famous astrologers. And I think a couple other people too. But you just get your chart, make the mirror, and then you look up all of the placements. And then as you read the shadow, you can try to see like where that's true for you. Is it, where would it be accurate? Something that's fun that a lot of people have been having happen is when they look up their shadow placements, they'll see that their mate is their shadow.
Right.
This is happening so much. It's really interesting to me. So like I've done some shadow charts, like say for a Scorpio, their wife or partner will be a Taurus. So many times we'll have people in our lives that hold the oppositional point, like in a very real way in astrology. So it's been cool for people to use it that way. So you can use it for your person, for your partners. You can also use it for transits. So depending, like I just did with the Pluto and Aquarius, right? So you can look up, if you don't want to do your chart, you could look up the current transit, right? Of say you know, whatever, Saturn and Pisces. So then you would look up the Saturn and Virgo transit and kind of see what's going on in the world there. So you can do it for self, for other, and then also for kind of like climate of the times that we're in.
Yeah. Well, can we do like maybe two very recent examples, because we're recording this on what is today, April 27th, I think.
Yes.
And there has been very recently, we had the eclipse.
Oh yeah. 8th. It was a doozy.
But then there was also, it was the conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus, I think.
In Taurus.
In
correct.
Taurus. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So looking at, let's say, the Jupiter and Uranus conjunction in Taurus.
Absolutely.
How would you look at that in terms of the shadow?
Yeah. So for Jupiter and Uranus conjunct in Taurus, you would look up the Jupiter Scorpio shadow and the Uranus Scorpio shadow, both, as they would both be kind of pertinent. So I happen to have my copy of my book here. So it would be as easy as you go to the chapter on Jupiter shadows, right? Mm-hmm. And then we turn to the Scorpio Jupiter shadow, which I label as overkill, right? It starts by saying the Scorpio shadow of Jupiter will take its survival needs to the extreme and lose track of clear boundaries between self and other. So in other words, you're going to see like fighting over resources, or Taurus energy I always see is with earth, food, scarcity. Right. So it was going into scarcity and literally starvation, which of course we sadly have seen. And that tied in with the eclipse. So the eclipse sequence was Libra Aries, right? So it started with the lunar eclipse in Libra and then went into the April 8th Aries, which of course is war, you know, among other things, also ego. So we saw all kinds of stuff happening with the conflicts that are currently happening in multiple places right now. There's not a single one that I think is larger than another, although number wise, certainly, but there's multiple conflicts that met at a head at that date, certainly. Mm. And then we had at the conjunction, all of the scarcity of resources came up. And then we had the United States voting to delegate resources also due to the scarcity of resources, fears, right? For the Uranus in Scorpio part of that, Scorpio is always root chakra. So a Scorpio shadow is always going to be about scarcity needs, like I need this, or there'll be like some greed involved there, or like control issues, right? With Scorpio shadows. So I'll look up the Uranus shadow, Scorpio and Uranus shadow. Oh my God, this is so weird. I forget what I write sometimes because I've written so much, but it's the Pied Piper. Literally the last 3 days I've been talking about the Pied Piper and it keeps coming up with everybody. So I had like I'm having a cluster of synchronicity right now. You're going to have to pardon me. But the Pied Piper was actually a real thing that happened in Hameln, Germany. And I was talking, anyway, this is like a lot, but I was having a conversation about how Jesus was a little bit like Pied Piper too. Because there's this controversy that showed his apostles were actually children with some of the translations. That's obviously offensive for a lot of people, but it was just looking at some of the translations, some of his followers were children. So that was something that came up. So I was talking about, like the Pied Piper, which literally is the Uranus shadow. And it talks about disease spreading organisms. When Uranus went into Taurus, we had COVID and the pandemic. And I talk about in the book, historically, when Uranus goes into Taurus, we have diseases. This happened. And I talk about the word influence and influenza in there as well. So we would see microorganism disease stuff with the Uranus going through Taurus, because that shadow in Scorpio is the influencer that is microorganisms. So those would be like a recent transit example of how those shadows will show up, right? Through scarcity of resources like food and then diseases.
Thank you for that.
Yes.
So again, I know that we're running out of time. You have something coming up here shortly. So the final questions are, what do you have coming up next? What are you working on?
I've been going into fiction writing and really enjoying that. I did put out a novel called 4D that I really enjoyed a lot. And then I'm trying to right now work on another fiction novel, because there's something about, you know, I do all this data heavy kind of research writing that sometimes can be a little unapproachable for people. So I like the idea of using a narrative to get some of the information through. So I've been playing with that a bit as well. So I've been working on those. I've been trying to do some film as well with Courtney Sell. We did an Egregore film. Mitch Horowitz was in that as well for folks. There's a link to it on my website, which is witchofthedawn.com if people want to check that out. And then I'm also working on a documentary series that hopefully we'll get funding for about our good friend, George Letty, who was one of the individuals who was responsible to help medical marijuana get passed because of all of the gay men and people that were suffering from AIDS. So we've been trying to get some funding for that documentary because he's like one of our favorite people on the planet. And it's an incredible history that people are not aware of, and that a lot of people suffered to get your weed that you're smoking every day came out of a large amount of suffering from people who really were watching all of their friends and loved ones die monstrously from AIDS. So I think it's a good story to tell. So that's what I'll be trying to work on.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. I look forward to that. And I just personally, I feel that we're just at the beginning of something. You know, I'm back in Colorado, and this Colorado was the first state to legalize cannabis. And then we were the first state to legalize psilocybin and DMT and peyote, I think.
Amazing.
So, and I keep telling my friend that I'm living with, it's like, I am so looking forward to seeing this transformation of Colorado. You know, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen?
Right. Next? It's exciting times we live in for sure.
Yeah. And there's definitely a lot of medicine available, not just physical medicine, but spiritual medicine as well.
Yes. There's so much coming forward now that it's thrilling. There's been a threshold crossed for sure.
Yeah, we're in an initiatory period, I think. So we have to do that shadow work. We have to go into the underworld and bring into the light the shadows. That's part of
It's going to help us go further. It's going to be better if we can just suffer a bit of discomfort, you know?
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Maja, I have very much enjoyed this conversation. So I thank you so much for your time. I will put a link for your website and your book in the show notes in the video description. And so thank you. I really appreciated this.
Oh, this was so delightful. I'm so grateful for your presence. This was such a great conversation. Thank you so much.
And that's a wrap on episode 144 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're part of my YouTube audience. Now, you know what's coming up next. All the usual. Sign up for my Patreon, which has several perks for members, including ad-free episodes. I know how annoying these ads can be. Please share this with friends and family and on social media as well. And subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. You know the drill. Here's the thing. All of that is really important. Right now, putting together this podcast is a labor of love, and I do love it. I'm in the process of making changes to improve the podcast and the YouTube channel. It's slow going, but your support will help me speed up the process and ensure that I can continue with the podcast and offer much more content than what I do now. As I always like to say, I'm here in the front range doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology, psychedelics, and consciousness, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the Rebel Spirit, and you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace. May you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.